I gave him the shorts, then went to change in Buffer. Simon called, "Have a good bathe," as I ran through the bedroom, then turned back to Rose. They were sitting on the window seat, looking splendidly settled. It was only while I was changing that I fully realized what I had let myself in for. I, who hate cold water so much that even putting on a bathing suit makes me shiver, I went to the moat via the ruins beyond the kitchen. Near there, a plank bridge runs across to the wheat field. I sat on it, carefully keeping my feet well above the water. Neil wasn't down. I could see the full length of the moat because the moon was rising. It was casting the most unearthly light across the green wheat, so beautiful that I nearly forgot the horror of having to bathe. Neil came down looking very tall in the black bathing shorts. "Where are you, Cassandra?" he called. I called back that I was coming, then put one toe in the water to know the worst. It was a far worse worst than I had anticipated. I walked slowly along the edge of the field, with the wheat tickling my legs coldly as I brushed past, sat down on the bank opposite to him, and began a bright conversation. Apart from putting off the horror of plunging in, I felt dawdling was advisable in order to give Rose more time, because I was pretty sure that once we did get into the moat, we should very soon get out again. I talked about the beauty of the night. I told him the winning anecdote of how I tried to cross the moat in a clothes basket after I first heard about coracles. Then he interrupted me and said, "I believe you're stalling about the swim. I'm going in anyway. Is it deep enough for me to dive?" I said yes, if he was careful. "Look out for the mud at the bottom," Thomas warned him. He did a cautious dive and came up looking a very surprised man. "Gosh, that was cold," he shouted, "and after all the sunshine we've been having." I said, "I wonder if I ought to bathe, really, after such a heavy dinner." "You don't get away with that," said Neil. "It was you who suggested it. Come on, or I'll pull you in. It's really quite bearable." I said to God, "Please, I'm doing this for my sister. Warm it up a bit." But of course I knew he wouldn't. My last thought before I jumped was that I'd almost sooner die. It was agony, like being skinned with icy knives. I swam madly, telling myself it would be better in a minute, and feeling quite sure it wouldn't. Neil swam beside me. I must have looked very grim, because he suddenly said, "Say, you all right?" "Just," I gasped. But by the time we'd swum back as far as the drawing room, I was beginning to enjoy it. Topaz and the vicar, framed in the yellow square of the window, were looking down on us. There was no sign of Rose and Simon at the window high above. I hoped they were too engrossed to look out. After we turned the corner to the front of the castle, there was no more golden light from the windows or the lantern, nothing but moonlight. We swam on our backs, looking up at the sheer, unbroken walls. Never had they seemed to me so high. Once we were round on the Belmont stretch of the moat, it was very dark because the moon wasn't high enough to shine over the house. Suddenly, something white loomed ahead of us, and there was a hiss and a beating of wings. We had collided with the sleeping swans. Neil enjoyed that, and I laughed myself, but I was really quite frightened. Swans can be very dangerous. Luckily, ours bore no malice. They just got out of our way and flapped into the bulrushes. Soon after that, we swam under the Belmont Bridge and round into the moonlight again on the south side of the moat. There are no ruins there. The garden comes right down to the water. The big bed of white stocks smelt heavenly. I was tired by then, so I floated, and Neil did too. It was lovely just drifting along, staring up at the stars. That was when we first heard the vicar at the piano playing air from Handel's Water Music.